We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 154. Oh boy, have the Yankees limped their way to the All-Star break. Scott, we were hoping that they would ride some momentum after that Frazier walk-off bomb. Didn't happen. Same shit, different week for this team. I feel like every time we get on in recording, something bad has just happened. No different this week.
They're really good at carrying momentum on to the next day. They're awesome at that. Even if they have one big moment, it usually gets squandered pretty quickly. But, alas, we have made it. We are at the All-Star break, and we are not completely out of it. It could have been a lot worse if you look at how this team has played over the past 3 weeks. It could have been a lot worse. But as it stands today,
I don't know. What's worse than what we've watched for three and a half, 4 weeks?
Well, no, the baseball was terrible. You don't get much worse than the baseball. I'm talking about the scenario in which the Yankees are currently in.
Yes.
Only 3.5 out of first place.
Amazing.
That's unbelievable. Only two on the loss side. Unbelievable. That's crazy.
Scott, they've won 7 games since June 13th, and they're only 3.5 games out of first place. I mean, the Red Sox need to be looking at themselves in the mirror being like, we miss a chance to bury this team, because the Yankees are playing the Red Sox at Fenway Park right after the All-Star break. If they come out and somehow put what just happened behind them, and the Yankees can go in and take 2 out of 3 from the Red Sox right after the All-Star break, the Red Sox are like, well, shit, we just missed a golden opportunity to bury this team. So, yes, in that sense, you're absolutely right. The Yankees are lucky. It's 100% lucky, the position they're in right now.
There's no doubt about it. I mean, but that's the narrative. You're right. That's the narrative when you come back. The narrative is that we have been the worst. We have sucked as badly as badly as you could play baseball for the last 3 weeks. And the team that we're going to right now is only ahead of us by 3.5 games. They didn't put the nail in the coffin when they had the opportunity. Let's make them pay for it. That's the narrative, right?
It's got to be.
Go out and hopefully you play some good baseball. They're getting healthy. You got Holiday coming back right after the break. He'll be in Boston. Starlin Castro will be back at least somewhere in that series. So they're reloading, and guys are coming back, and hopefully they can kind of regain that juju, the good juju, and shake that voodoo. And come back and win some games.
Anybody coming back that was injured in the bullpen? Oh, wait, no. All those guys just suck. Never mind.
Well, not anymore. Not anymore. It's a tale of two seasons. First half is over.
You've got to hope that they can take these few days off. I know a lot of Yankees are going to be in Miami for the All-Star game, but it's fun. It's fun for them. First-timers, a lot of first-timers like Judge and Sanchez and Severino. But you got to just hope the rest of the team can go have a mental vacation, get away from it, and come back and just treat it like a new season on Friday. I don't know how you flip that switch, but you got to hope they can flip it.
Yeah, I think they do. I think it's
really?
A
you have confidence? Hold on. You really have confidence after what we've seen since June 13th? That was when it all went bad. That's when the injuries started piling up. That's when Sabathia went down, Hicks went down, Castro, Holiday got the virus, the bullpen started imploding. The snowball has been rolling a million miles an hour down a steep hill since June 13th. They have not been able to stop it. They can't gain momentum. When they do get a big hit, like the walk-off, their starter goes out there the next day and gives up a 3-run jack in the first inning. So it's like before they can even get up to bat in the next game, they're already back down into a hole. There's absolutely no momentum on this team right now. You think they can just turn it around? You have confidence in that?
Oh, yeah, 100%. And the reason I think it is because I think the young guys, when they're playing baseball, they don't know any better. I mean, what was that line they had at the end of last year? We're dumb enough, or we're too dumb to realize what we're doing.
Young and dumb, lack of a better phrase. Yeah.
But it was a good quote, whatever the hell it was. It was basically talked about how this team had they didn't know any better, but they just kept winning games because they were out there having fun and whatever. I think when we get all these bodies back and they start all playing together again, and they start having fun again, I think this mental break is very important, because when you have a week off, which you don't have during a baseball season until the All-Star break, you're finally letting things go and you can get recharged. And I think these young guys are going to be playing hard all the way through the end of the year. You're getting some of the veterans back. getting healthy. And to me, that is a huge deal, getting these guys back and healthy, because along with health becomes confidence that you have those guys there. And then I think that can also snowball. But when you are going in such a bad stretch and then you look around you and you don't have half your team there, it's horrible to look at, because you know that you have to be perfect. And when you try to be perfect in baseball, 95% of the time, you're worse because you're pressing. And baseball is one of those loosey-goosey sports where you have to have fun. You got to be loose to get production. So that's where my confidence comes from. I think that they're going to be looking around and saying, okay, pro ball player, stud, let's do this. And they're going to go out and play well. And if not, it's going to be a dogfight. This whole the whole division right now is packed.
Not going to be a dogfight for very long if they keep losing every series. But there's no doubt the injuries have killed them. Between Holiday, Castro, and Hicks, those are three of their most productive offensive players. But has really the offense been the issue the last couple weeks? I don't think so.
I mean, partly, but no, it's definitely not the main issue. I mean, it's very clear that the pitching is the main issue, that the back of the bullpen is the main issue. But you got to believe, look, one, I don't have confidence the Clippers coming back anymore. I have no idea what's wrong with that guy. But I do see a very healthy and confident Chad Green who can slot in towards the end of that bullpen, who I think will be a big second half contributor. But you got to believe also that Dellin Betances and Aroldis Chapman are going to come back, right? I mean, you have to have that confidence that these guys are going to come back, because they are perennial all-stars. They have a ridiculous track record. And, you know, just what we've seen over the past week, I mean, we saw Betances and Chapman come on Saturday and pitch lights out. So, I don't know. It's still there. I got to believe that they're coming back. If they don't come back, we're screwed. But if they do come back, I think that we're going to get a lot more better performances from the middle relief, because they're not going to be used as much.
You said this team, you know, they're too inexperienced to know any better. They're just going to go out there and play baseball and win. What if they got ahead of themselves? They realized, hey, we are a good team. Now there's actually pressure on us. We're expected to win now. If you looked at any MLB power rankings at the beginning of June, the Yankees were in the top three. It was Houston. It was probably the Dodgers number two. Then it was the Yankees right there at number three. So what if they looked around and said, oh, shit, now we actually have expectations to make the playoffs here and do some damage. And then they got a little ahead of themselves, maybe a little extra pressure.
Yeah, I don't really buy into it. I buy more into the fact that we had Chris Carter starting as our first baseman.
Hey,
everybody who was destroyed with their health, and it was just a terrible, terrible 3 weeks. And not only did the play was terrible, but everybody, there were a lot of guys hurt. And then you had Chris Carter playing first base, and you had guys from the minor leagues up who probably shouldn't be there in the first place. So I don't know. I just think they have to put that behind them. They're professionals. They got to do that, and they'll be good. I still have confidence.
Yeah, I'm surprised. I don't have as much confidence as you do. So I don't know how you can be optimistic after what we've just watched. But I hope I'm proven wrong, because I fully bought into this team after June 10th, after that weekend when they absolutely demolished Baltimore. You and I sat here. We were so happy about the event. We were so happy about the team, and man, has it been downhill ever since. On our Thursday episode coming up, we're going to get into all of the midseason recap. We'll do midseason awards, all that stuff, in addition to talking about the Home Run Derby and the All-Star Game and all that stuff. But we've just figured this episode, we've got to talk about this Milwaukee series, which for a little while on Friday night looked pretty good. Judge passing Joe DiMaggio before the All-Star break with 30 home runs. 30 home runs before the All-Star break is absolutely mental. I don't know what else we can say about Judge other than thank God for Aaron Judge, because he's the only fun thing going on with this team right now.
He has already now gone through an entire half season, his first full half season of the New York Yankees, and has not had a slump. He has not had one slump. It's unreal. I don't understand. I still don't. I mean, I've probably said this 500 times on 500 episodes, but how is this guy... How is it the same person from a guy who strikes out at 50% rate at the end of last year, who comes back now and doesn't even slump? He just makes contact consistently, hitting 330. I mean, it's unbelievable. There's you know, you could just say a million things on how good he's been, but it's unbelievable. First of all, I'm very surprised that the DiMaggio record actually stood that long. It seems low for, I guess that just plays to the you know, there really aren't very many guys who hit home runs as rookies.
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, I know the rookie record is Mark McGwire. I think it's 49 home runs. Didn't we have a mailbag question about that recently? But you know what I read over the weekend? I saw Brian Hoke tweeted that in Judge's locker, he has a piece of paper that says 179 on it, which was his batting average last season in the majors.
Huh. I love that. That's awesome. That's, this guy is unbelievable. The fact that he even puts that stuff up there, and I don't know, man. He's almost too good to be true. It's like one of these moments he you're is. Looking around like, is this guy, what's going on here? Maybe he is a robot. Maybe he's a fake person.
And he's gotten to the point where when he came up in the ninth inning today with a guy on base, Gardner was on base, I was expecting Judge to go deep or do something, and it didn't happen. You can't fault him. He can't hit a home run every time the team needs it. But he's at that level now. He's at that status where you expect him to put the team on its back every night.
Yeah. I mean, people, when Aaron Judge comes up and you have a TV on, like, people don't go to the bathroom. They wait to watch Aaron Judge at bat. And that hasn't happened in a long time. That type of thing where it's must-see TV every single time this man is up, you better pay attention. Eyes are on. I mean, people are changing channels probably that are not Yankee fans that have the package because they know Aaron Judge is coming up so they can watch that at bat. Like, that's the type of impact this guy has made in half of a season.
Other than Gary Sanchez in the second half of last year, where that was the same thing, where you couldn't change the channel, you couldn't leave the room, you wanted to see what Sanchez did. I can't really remember a Yankees offensive player where you felt that way. Not that there's, I mean, they've had so many good players. I'm not saying they've had no good players. But like you said, that factor, that X factor is rare.
Yeah. Yeah, it is rare. It's just going to continue to grow. I mean, this guy's building a legacy in his first half year. It's so stupid how where he is right now in the half of a season. It's unbelievable. But you know, he's building that legacy, he's building that reputation, and the other side of that reputation is that his demeanor is, like, you know, cool as a cucumber. Like, this guy is just nothing phases him, and he's getting that reputation already as well throughout the majors.
You also pointed out in our Facebook chat that both he and DiMaggio had similar teeth going on. So I guess the gap tooth in the front is the key to breaking a rookie home run record for the Yankees.
Yeah, lots of lots of similarities in that gap right there. It's an interesting, it's very strange. Apparently you need a gap to hit 30 home runs or 29 home runs as a rookie.
Specifically for that Friday game, they had the 51-minute rain delay while the Yankees were batting. Girardi brings Montgomery back out, and you and I were looking this up before because we thought it was weird what Girardi said. After the game, Girardi said that he could use Montgomery for 10 to 15 minutes after the delay. And you and I both were like, why the hell? What is this arbitrary 10 to 15 minutes? If he's back up and ready and going back out on the mound, why is he only good for 10 to 15 minutes? That makes absolutely no sense to me.
Why is there a clock on it? I mean, are we talking, we've always talked if there's with the pitcher's limits that we're talking, you know, innings, pitch count, all these other things. But time, minutes after he sits for 51 minutes or even longer than that. It's so weird. It just doesn't, I don't get it.
I think he was saying because he would only be warm and ready to go for 10 to 15 minutes. But once you're back up and warmed up,
you're
warmed up again.
Yeah, it doesn't, he doesn't expire. I don't understand that. Like, why is there an expiration date or expiration time on the length you can use him? I mean, I truly don't understand what the significance of a clock is at that point. I don't get it.
And it's a 4-2 ball game. He brings him back out for the fifth inning. If you're going to bring him back out, why do you then pull him? Like, at least let him try and get through the inning. He's a starting pitcher. He's starting with a clean inning. He's probably one of your best options at that point. Montgomery's been really good. Why then are you going to Tyler Webb over Jordan Montgomery? I say either let him try and get through that inning or don't bring him back out at all.
Well, and the other thing is, if you're looking at the starts that Jordan Montgomery has had, he could get out of trouble. I mean, he gets out of trouble quite often, actually. When he puts guys on, I mean, he was doing this early in the season, even when he was walking more guys. He gets guys on, and then he gets out of the trouble. And he's done it consistently. So I have confidence in a guy. First of all, we need to really identify why in God's name, if you're going to let your pitcher sit for 51 minutes, stay warm, get on a bike, throw a little light bullpen session, do some stretching, walking around, all the things you need to do to keep your temperature up and to stay loose so that you're going back into the game. Why are you then going to pull him out? Then if that's the case, if you're in your mind saying if he gets in trouble, you know, within the first couple of batters, I'm pulling him. Then don't send him out.
Exactly.
There. Give someone else a clean in, and give someone that, you know, that you have confidence in. Granted, he has confidence in probably nobody in the bullpen right now, but that's even more reason why you let Jordan Montgomery keep going. What do you have? 74 pitches. It doesn't make sense.
But again, wasn't a pitch count issue. It was a minutes issue.
Does he have a bedtime? Is this a curfew? I don't get it. Like, they were optioning him back to AAA. Did it have to be done before a certain time? Is there some stupid book rule that I don't know about?
People also freaked out that he got optioned back down to AAA.
Yeah, I know. That was just icing on the cake. It was funny that it was in the transactions. I mean, granted, everybody, if you have half a brain, you realize what that was, but he's not moving. He didn't actually go to Scranton, I guarantee it.
That'd be funny, but, though, if he actually did. Here's your Greyhound bus ticket. Enjoy the ride to Scranton. It's scenic.
So Girardi in this game was blowing my mind.
Yeah, that's the
doing
thing.
Girardi things with the bullpen.
So Girardi, because he was managing, yeah, to me, he was managing in between. He was kind of like, I'm hoping Montgomery can get me through this inning, but then I'm going to go to Tyler Webb. You've got a fully rested bullpen. They had an off day on Thursday, and then after this weekend series, you've got 5 days, 4 days off. Everyone is available for this series. Why the hell is Tyler Webb sniffing the mound?
So you're also going in with a two-run lead into the sixth inning, right? When Tyler Webb comes on, and then Clippard comes in and lets all the runners come in, because that's what he does. He's really good at letting inherited runners in, so his numbers look clean. But the damage was done then. What I don't understand is, we had the day off, like you said, there was a rested bullpen. Why is Chad Green at that moment not coming into the game?
He wasn't available.
Today,
he wasn't available for Friday night's game.
He was not available?
Nope.
Why?
I don't know.
That's what he said?
Yes.
He said this after the game. This makes no sense.
Yes.
They had a day off.
I know.
Why
he pitched on Wednesday, but you have a day
and
off.
He pitched two innings. He pitched two innings tonight, I think, on Sunday. I don't get. This is a game when you're going home on the homestand. Obviously, we know what's been happening over the past 3 weeks. Milwaukee's coming in as a first place team. It's a team that makes a ton of mistakes.
Oh my God, they're so sloppy.
Five errors on Friday night.
So sloppy.
And
how are they
two
in first place
on Saturday? Because they score a bunch of runs. They hit a freaking. Someone was saying on Twitter why when I said I don't know how this team is in first place, and someone came back and was like, well, they hit home runs when the bases are loaded. And yeah, that's exactly what they do. They took Tyler Clippard deep. But I look, you got to win this game, in my opinion. You're coming home. You got to nip this in the ass. You need to end this bullshit before the All-Star game. You just got to nip it in the ass. So why aren't you throwing your best darts? Why aren't you throwing your best guys out there? Chad Green has been probably the most consistent bullpen guy over the past month. He's probably been the best guy out there. And why not throw him at that point to try to keep this lead at bay? I don't understand how you could possibly. You're saying you don't get how Tyler Webb is in there. I could see Tyler Webb in the game way over Tyler Clippard. I don't understand how Tyler Clippard even remotely touches this game at all.
This series needed to be managed like almost a playoff series. You
yes.
had the day off before. You had the days off after. You needed desperately to win a series and have some momentum, have some confidence, have some good vibes going into the All-Star break. I don't care what the, like, if his binder says, no, I pitched Chad Green in 5 of the last 9 days, so he can't pitch. He needs an extra day off. Bullshit. Chad Green needs to be in that situation, or he needs to let Montgomery try and fight through it. Like you said, I mean, it's just this in-between management is what gets him in trouble. Clippard goes out there, gives up the grand slam. I mean, it's horrible. That was a horrible, horrible, deflating loss. Tyler Clippard looked like he was going to cry again walking off the mound. Girardi's just walking out there rubbing the baseball like, what can I do? I can't believe Tyler Clippard didn't come through. What the fuck, Girardi?
Yeah, it's unbelievable. And at that point, that's to me, this game is all on Girardi. I think he completely blew the bullpen on this game. And Clippard should have never even sniffed a game that's relatively close. The fact that Clippard's out there, anything that happens that Clippard does is Girardi's fault, in my opinion, because he shouldn't be in the game. You should try to be putting your best foot forward. And if you think that putting Tyler Clippard at this point, after the past 3 weeks, just before the All-Star break, when you could give this guy a significant amount of time off or potentially get him in a game that really doesn't matter as much, then you're crazy. And knowing that Montgomery is probably going to be sent down due to the paperwork so that you can get more arms up the next day, it's not like your bullpen is going to be depleted if you go to a couple different guys on Friday night. It's not that big of a deal. You know damn well there's more guys coming up.
Again,
what's the deal?
Manage all for the game that you're playing. You don't know what's going to happen on Saturday. Manage for the Friday game, which you were leading after the rain delay. You needed to manage to win that game. Also, just a beautiful quote from Tyler Clippard after the game. I really don't know what happened. I felt good out there.
Yeah, he feels the best he's ever felt physically. That's awesome. I'm very happy for him that he's in shape. He can do a bunch of push-ups and wind sprints. It's terrific. He can't throw the ball over the ball.
Sometimes you can't get on Girardi for his choices, like when he put Dellin Betances out there on that was Wednesday's game, and he walked the bases loaded. It's like you put Dellin Betances out there with a lead in the eighth inning, and he pukes all over himself. Well, I'm sorry. I mean, that's what you do 10 times out of 10 is you put Dellin Betances out there. You don't put Tyler Webb and Tyler Clippard and all these crappy middle relievers out there in games you need to be winning.
What about Adam Warren? Adam Warren's a guy that you have confidence in who's pitched very well since pretty much all season. And since he's been back, he's pitched well. Chad Green and Adam Warren are my number one and two guys right there in that situation to win this game and especially to get the ball to Betances and Chad.
They can give you length in that situation. You don't have to keep going to Webb. Every time you go to guys like Webb and Clippard, the more you're rolling the dice with each time. The odds of them giving up runs goes up with each crappy pitcher you bring in the game. Oh boy, Severino really settled down on Saturday after that three-run jack he gave up in the first inning. That was a three-run homer he gave up, right?
Yes, yeah. It was a cheap home run, but it was a home run nonetheless. Severino looked really good all day long, but again, getting off to a horrible start with same thing with Tanaka today. I mean, these first run home runs are just unbelievable. How many of them have happened over the past 3 to 4 weeks? The just deflating home runs where immediately this team and this offense has to put the team back on its shoulders and get back in a game. So
we have a stat here.
Luckily on Saturday they did. They got they got what they needed. And Severino was nasty after that first inning. Nasty. His stuff was it was unhittable stuff. 10 strikeouts. Those are the only runs he gave up. He threw 7 innings. Like, that's the Severino you want. He's got to limit those mistakes, though. Those mistakes cannot be happening all the time. They're just happening too frequently.
That's the thing with Severino is that he seems to have those mistakes every now and again. He did settle down. He did this also in a couple starts ago where he gave up a couple early runs and settled down. Gave the team a chance to come back. Stats, though, on the first inning home runs. Tanaka and Pineda are the second and third worst in baseball for giving up first inning home runs with 8 and 7 apiece. Severino gave the one this time. Two out of your 5 starting pitchers, 2 veterans on the staff, giving up first inning home runs. I don't know. Are they not warming up enough? What's going on here?
No, they just suck. I'm not. There's no way to look into if they're warming up or what. They just suck. They suck. So they're mentally weak.
Tanaka can't pitch in the first inning. He can't pitch in day games. He can't pitch on regular rest. He can't pitch when the team has a ceremony.
Definitely not during a ceremony.
He can't pitch when the team really needs a win.
Right.
He can pitch when it's 6 days off and the team's on a 5-game winning streak and they score him 14 runs.
Or if he's going against his home country nemesis.
Right.
Yeah. Another crucial point where he can lock it down.
Frazier gets the walk-off home run. He had also broke up the no-hitter on Saturday in that game.
Yes.
That was his first huge moment as a Yankee. It was so fun watching him and the team celebrate, and I'm thinking maybe this is going to get them going. I actually tricked myself into thinking this is going to get them going.
It's hard to get yourself going when you only have one more game though, and then an entire week off. But so that's
if they won today. If they won today, that would have been totally good memories going into the All-Star break.
I guess, but we've realized the momentum is shit on this team. It means nothing.
Good momentum is better than bad momentum.
I guess so. Bad momentum is a real thing. Good momentum for this team is not a real thing. But the walk-off, talking about that real quick. One, the dude just looks like when he strolls up to the plate, he just looks like he's absolutely relishing these big moments. You can tell that he really likes it and like he gets up for them. And you know, when the first pitch came and then he got that fastball that he was looking for, you could tell he was looking for it when he let the first pitch go. It was a good breaking ball and I was surprised that he laid off of it. But when he got the fastball that he was looking for, because he was definitely looking for something, specific, and he got it. And they talk about bat speed, the scouts, and Brian Cashman with the legendary bat speed quote. Holy shit! The some of the fastest bat speed I have ever seen, honestly. When he came through and put that swing, that ball left the park ridiculously fast, and the as fast as that the barrel went from behind his head to hit the ball was insane. I mean, the guy has some unbelievable hand speed. So
it's those Paul O'Neill was massive talking, forearms.
Yeah, he can whip it around. Paul O'Neill was talking about him all pretty much the entire time when he was on there about keeping his weight back, and he sees how he's on his front foot.
He is.
Very early. He's really early, yeah. And it's actually interesting when you see his swing and how far out in front he gets. But the thing is that, you know, he's always been able to get that foot down and catch up with his hands. I have a feeling it's going to be an adjustment, and they've already been talking about him staying back or adding a leg kick or something so that he does stay back a little bit further, because, you know, there's a lot more guys throwing harder in the major league, so that's not going to be, you know, as easy as it was in the minor ranks. But man, he made some adjustments, and what a good homestand. I mean, ridiculous moment too.
He does kind of have a weird swing because his back leg sort of kicks out towards the third base dugout when he swings.
Yeah, he almost goes up on a pivot on that front leg. It's pretty crazy to watch. If you watch it in slow motion, it's pretty crazy.
I forget who they were comparing him to.
I was just trying to think of that too. It was a good comparison. I'll think of it.
Yeah, where it was the same type of thing where he was, all of his weight was on his front foot. And I guess, like we were saying, as long as you can stay balanced with that, it's fine. But I think that does open him up to a lot of issues with breaking balls, which is actually what Donnie Collins said when we talked to him a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, no, he's just going to have to, those adjustments are going to come. I mean, there's no doubt about it. He's going to have to make some adjustments when he's at the major league level, especially because of the way he, you know, his swing is. And I think staying back on those breaking balls, like you're saying, if you're pouncing on a fastball with your hands, you know, being the big catch up. But he made the adjustments. I mean, honestly, it's working okay. I mean, he walked off the freaking game and did it in an impressive fashion. So,
and got them back into the game on Sunday with a 2-run shot.
Yeah, another, and that was an opposite field home run, which leads me to believe in-game adjustments, in-series adjustments, dude staying back, driving the ball to the right side. That's how Aaron Judge has found a ton of success, is going to the right side. And it's obvious that the guys that Cochran and Marcus Thames are teaching that. They're emphasizing taking what the pitcher is giving you, taking what the pitch is, and going with it, not trying to pull the ball all the time and to go to opposite field. Because Yankee Stadium, of all stadiums, if you can go to the opposite field, you're going to get a lot of you're going to get a lot of favorable results with that short porch and, you know, just going into right center field. I think it's a very, very good approach for all these guys.
Sunday's game took 4 hours. It was a 4-hour 5-3 ball game. The Yankees had a ton of chances. They were 1-for-16 with runners in scoring position, and for about 5 seconds, they were winning on a Chase Headley 3-run home run that was called foul. As soon as it was called foul, I knew he was going to strike out.
Oh, yeah, that was inevitable. He knew it was a foul ball, too, if you watch him walking down the line. I mean, he was about to pull up and go back. I mean, imagine, though, replay's not there. That's a home run. Still a home run.
That's true. Yeah, I watched.
It would have just given the bullpen another opportunity to blow.
I watched the replay, and I don't know how it didn't hit the foul pole.
Yeah,
so close.
When you see the replay, though, you can see clearly that it's on the other side. But, yeah. It's a shame. What could have been? And then, yes, he does go out and strike out. 1-for-16. 1-for-16. Runners in scoring position by the New York Yankees on Sunday. That is a problem. Although we can't destroy the offense because the offense has been doing as much as they possibly can, but that's a problem.
It's a problem, and I feel stupid getting on the offense, but maybe if Starlin Castro and Hicks and Holiday are in the lineup, they go 2-for-16 and actually win the game.
Yeah. It's funny that we're saying Hicks in part of this
I know he was struggling before he got injured, but Hicks has been one of their best players this season.
Yeah. No, he was I'm interested to see how he comes back and actually what happens when he does come back with the players, especially if a guy like Clint Frazier is still hitting the ball. You know, he's going to basically make them keep him up if he is still hitting the ball.
Well, they're not going to carry 5 outfielders, or at least you can't find playing time for 5 outfielders.
Yeah, something's got to give. Something's going to happen.
There's a very expensive guy patrolling center field that might be riding the bench.
I mean, he's been practically worthless. He's just such an invisible, worthless character in this whole storyline at this point.
If Ellsbury...
he really just needs to go
away. If Ellsbury's not getting on with Kencher's interference, he's absolutely useless to the Yankees.
Yeah, I mean, it's such an inevitable eating of the contract that's going to happen at any point, and they might as well just get it
gonna
over.
Gonna have
with.
To take a big bite out of that.
It doesn't matter. He's no better than a AAA guy at this point. Honestly, he really isn't.
Speaking of guys who are useless to the Yankees right now, Greg Bird had a mystery member of the Yankees brass comment about him. He's this person, or Bill Madden of the New York Daily News, wrote on Friday. Got a quote from somebody in Yankees executive office who said, "You really have to wonder what's with this guy. You'd think with Judge and Sanchez, the guys he came up through the system with doing so well up here, he'd want to be a part of this. Apparently not." Basically calling Greg Bird out for his injury and not getting back on the field. I just hate that we're sitting here again, and this stinks of Randy Levine, but I hate that we're sitting here again with a Yankees executive like Lon Trost and Randy Levine or whoever this was making comments like this. Why does it seem like these Yankees executives keep putting their foot in their mouth? Why can't they just shut the hell up and let Joe Girardi, Brian Cashman, and Hal Steinbrenner do the talking?
Yeah, it's definitely an old guy. I mean, this is an absolute old guy comment. It's reminiscent of what was going on with the Knicks over the past 2 weeks with Phil Jackson and calling out the Porzingis kid for you know, the exit interview and just having him not being wanting to be part of the team or whatever. It's just like these old guys that just don't give a shit and they just say whatever. And they have diarrhea of the mouth and they ramble and ramble. And then guys are sitting there writing it down and just drooling at the comments because the ridiculous comments by the front office that will be, nobody will know who they are.
Right.
We're just going to call this a mystery guy.
And that's why the Yankees can ignore it. They don't have to comment
on it. It's Randy Levine. It's 100% Randy Levine.
Yo, it stinks of him. Bird said, "I wanted to play," which is obvious. What else is he going to say? I don't for a second think Bird is faking it or anything like that or dogging it to get back on the field. I just think he's a frail guy.
maybe Levine saw the video of him walking by Jeter in the clubhouse. You know, at the when Jeter had his ceremony and if him moping around.
Well, I remember because I didn't think it was maybe, anything back then, but now I might think it is.
Maybe he saw that video and he's like, "Wow, this guy has no confidence. He doesn't even want to be here."
Do you think the Yankees move on from Greg Bird if he does not get back this season?
I think they're gonna. Well, I think they're gonna have to at some point. Yeah.
Well, do you think but they'll think go they'll into give him next an opportunity season to play. Again with our Greg Bird is our first baseman, or are they gonna have
to make
plans for another first baseman long term?
Yes. I don't know if it'll be 100% long term. It depends. I think if they can find something in this trade market, they're looking at this nice little segue that we're talking about now into this Justin Bour guy from Miami, who a lot of people probably are not familiar with. But he's having a good year. He's been around for a little bit. Seems like he's just putting it together. And he's controlled, I think, through what, 2020 or 2019. So, you know, if you see a guy like that who's got some youth to him and is controlled, then I could see it. But it's got to be the right move, and it depends on what they're giving up. But I think what we're looking at more of a realistic option is more of a stopgap guy to see if Bird can come back. But they're not going to go in next year. If he doesn't come back this year, they're not going to go into next year expecting him to be healthy and for him to be the guy, because it's just, at that point, it's irresponsible.
Justin Bour, I mean, this is the, is it Bour or Bauer, first of all?
I think it's Bour.
Okay. This is really his first good season. He's in the home run derby, yeah. So he's going to get a lot of attention, but this guy is 29 years old. This is the first time he's really played well for the Marlins. They are not going to trade him cheaply. They're going to try and get every ounce of value out of him right now. So I think it would take more prospects than Brian Cashman is willing to part with for somebody who has only proven it for half a season.
Yeah, I agree with that. The attractiveness about him is that it's an extremely team-friendly contract. He's controlled, and you know, maybe this is his breakout year. Some guys develop later than others. Who knows? This is his breakout year. I don't know. It seems like I still go back to the guy who hit a home run against us today, Sunday. Stephen Vogt was an absolute perfect person to come in, and he could play some first. He could play he could play catcher, but he can hit. This guy's just he can hit. He's been an all-star for the past 2 years. Like, this was the guy that was on freaking waivers. Like, he was released by the Athletics. It was a perfect opportunity that the Brewers have stepped in, and he's already producing well for him. I don't know. That's the type of guy that I could see them, you know, going with at this point and seeing where Bird is.
But you don't like the G-Man?
Right. I do like G-Man. No, I think G-Man's good. Did you see the split he did today? Yeah. I mean, it was a ridiculous. The guy, he could play defense.
Hit another home run on Friday night.
Yeah.
He's the Asian Babe Ruth.
He's awesome. I like him. I think he's just fine. I mean, he'll probably fade out and be a 200 hitter.
100%.
But, you know, he's better than Chris Carter.
Exactly. What I wrote on Friday was, as long as he keeps his eyes open and catches the ball at first base and doesn't strike out four times a game, he's an upgrade over Chris Carter.
He's a lot more athletic, and you could tell he's like a fun go lucky guy. I mean, he's out there laughing and having fun with the guys. I've already seen more facial expressions on G-Man Choi than I have seen on Chris Carter for the entire year. Like, this guy is entertaining to watch. You know, the split today, I'm like, this guy could play defense. He's coming out to get the ball. He's helping his team.
Another,
he knows when to close the glove.
Another first base option is Matt Adams, and John Heyman actually floated this trade for the Yankees, for a couple of pitching prospects. I know Domingo Acevedo was one of them. Was Germán the other one that Heyman hypothesized that Atlanta would be looking for? Atlanta's sort of gotten a surprising season out of Matt Adams, so much so that Freddie Freeman is moving over to third base when he comes back, so he can both be on the field at the same time. But unlike Bauer, I don't think Matt Adams is going to cost anything, like only a couple of lower-level prospects. If Brian Cashman really thinks first base is what's holding this team back.
Yeah, and I think that's a better move, although I'm not buying into the Matt Adams resurgence either, you know, full on. I think he's having a good year. There's no doubt about it. But, I mean, I don't know. I look at the track record with a guy like that, and he had a good start in St. Louis, and then he just fizzled. But you're right in the fact that it's a better deal with probably a lot lower level prospects, guys that have a very slim chance of getting to the major leagues at this point. Mm-hmm. But I'm way more in favor of a deal like that.
It's lower
because
risk.
Honestly, is the production of a Matt Adams or Justin Bour going to be much different? Probably not.
No. Well, Adams is older. I mean, that's the only downside to him.
Not much. How old is Adams? He's not, what is he, 30?
I'm looking it up right now.
Yeah, I bet he's close to 30.
And how old did I say?
Bour is 29, I think you just said.
Matt Adams is 28.
Oh, there you go. He's younger. Younger option. There we go. Even better.
He just has been around a lot longer.
Yeah.
What do you think?
So, yeah, I think there's opportunities out there to do something like that, too. You know, another guy that's been rumored as well is Brandon Belt. I think he's got 1 year left, or he might be a rental. I don't remember where he is. But that's a guy that's probably going to ask for it. But he's not having a great year, so you might be able to get him on a downslope. That, to me, is more of a Cashman move, of a guy who's not doing as well and can come back and potentially get a higher risk. That's why, honestly, like, I thought Stephen Vogt was the perfect Cashman move. It's a perfect dumpster dive move. And, you know, maybe there's something else going on behind the scenes. They talked to him and he chose the Brewers. Maybe that's the case. Who knows?
Maybe he felt he'd get more playing time in Milwaukee. I don't know.
Well, I mean, first base is wide open, but I don't know. That was the dumpster dive move that I wanted. That was the circled move.
So Cashman said that the Yankees will look to be careful buyers at the deadline. To me, this means we will bring on more players as long as it doesn't cost us any of our big name prospects.
Or I think there's also an or to that statement, because I think that it's going to be a minor move in that sense. Like, you'll bring on more players, like you're saying, but I think there will be some kind of an exception, whereas if you can get somebody who is controlled, who can be part of the long-term future, then there could be a bigger move. I think that's, when he's talking careful, they're not going to go out and overspend for a guy for this year and go for it. It's got to be something that fits into the puzzle for not just this year, but longer term. And even if it's a guy that is expendable after this year, it's a contract that expires, then you wouldn't be giving up much for that. So I think there's two sides of it.
Absolutely. Do you think that they'll buy any bullpen help? Brad Hand of the Padres was rumored as well, and he's a lefty reliever having a really good season.
Yeah, I just, you know, after what we saw what happened last year with the reliever market at the trade deadline, I just
it's
feel
expensive.
Like it's going to be a big bounty. Yeah, I think it's going to be a lot. And the amount of puns that have been going on Twitter about giving up an arm and a leg to get a hand have been unbelievable. It's ridiculous.
You don't enjoy those? You don't enjoy those third grade jokes?
No, I liked the first 10 that I read, yes. But then it's the repeat people that are repeating the tweets and sending them to us that are not funny any longer. But yeah, the first ones were good. I think he's going to get too expensive. And I think San Diego is looking to cash in.
Right. Yeah, and it's also, like we talked about, I think it was last episode, where giving up prospects for a relief pitcher seems like it's counterproductive to what this team is doing long term.
But I'll tell you one thing that's really going, that's boding well for the Yankees right now, because I don't think this guy has a future on this team, is Jorge Mateo. When he got out to Double A, has been lights out. The dude's been phenomenal and really playing like the prospect they thought he was. And if he could go out there and prove that he is an up-and-coming stud shortstop that everybody thought he was going to be, that's a big blue chip right there to have, especially when, you know, really our infield is pretty much taken care of long-term if you're looking at Gleyber Torres, who's definitely the prospect ahead of him. So I think they could be a big guy, and I think they're definitely willing to trade Mateo at this point. I think that's the guy that you want to circle.
We know the Padres like Jorge Mateo because a couple of years ago when Craig Kimbrell was on the market, Mateo was the guy that Cashman said, nope, sorry, not giving up Mateo for Kimbrell.
Yeah, man, that's an interesting move. I mean,
because now Mateo is extremely, he's gone down as far as his prospect status, but like you just said, he's expendable with Gleyber.
Yeah, exactly. So I definitely would see him, and especially that he's playing well now, I think they're going to try to get rid of him, at the peak, as high as they can.
We have a couple mailbags to get to, but before that, I want to take the second to remind everybody to rate and review the podcast in iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, wherever it is that you're listening. I know in iTunes we're up well over 300 ratings at this point. It's awesome. A lot of great reviews as well. A lot of five-star. Love seeing those five-star reviews and people commenting on how much they enjoy the podcast. It really is great to read and also great to gain new listeners because they're looking for a Yankees podcast. They search Yankees in iTunes. We pop up first, which is awesome, and they're seeing that you guys are loving the podcast, so we appreciate it. Take a second, if you have not already, and give us that five-star review. First mailbag question is from Landon, and he says, Didi Gregorius' contract expires following this season. With Headley and Castro's contracts not set to expire for at least another season, should the Yankees consider allowing Didi to become a non-tendered free agent in favor of allowing Torres or potentially another prospect to take over at shortstop? One quick clarification, Didi's contract is not up. He is arbitration eligible after this season. He's not a full free agent until the 2020 season.
Yeah, so no, absolutely not. Landon, go get your head examined. Didi Gregorius is, I mean, if you look at the guys in front of him in shortstops in the American League, he's an all-star. I mean, he put up all-star numbers. He is a hell of a defensive player. He can hit righties. He can hit lefties. He's a good teammate. He can run. No, this, you know, playing shortstop in the major leagues is not an easy thing. I feel like people think that this is such an easy thing that we're always going to have a plug in another guy and he's going to do better. How are you going to do better than Didi Gregorius' numbers unless you have a guy like Carlos Correa who's coming up? And we don't know what Gleyber Torres is going to be. Would you be happy right now if Gleyber Torres put up Didi numbers in his first year? I think everybody would be extremely happy if he came up and put Didi numbers in. You know, so I look. Didi Gregorius should not, will not go anywhere. They need to keep him. He is, he's going to be a long-term, he's a long-term part of this rebuild. So, no, he's our shortstop.
I think Landon might be just concerned that Didi Gregorius is going to block Gleyber Torres, and I don't think that's the case. I think if Gleyber Torres keeps progressing like he was, they will find a spot for him, whether it's at third base or second base or shortstop, even if that means moving Didi around the diamond.
I think a lot of that, maybe that's the case. Maybe that's what the Landon is thinking. But I do think there's a lot of the mentality of that we have these guys in AAA and they're better. And that's just, it's just an assumption that they're going to be better.
The grass is always greener.
Well, yeah, and they're such a high prospect that they're going to be better. They're a better player because they're doing something in AAA or AA or freaking single A, wherever the hell they are. But it's just not the case. When you have a guy that has established himself and has gotten better year after year in the major leagues on the highest level, you don't just throw away that guy. You keep him. This is people have the same mentality about Starlin Castro. This is a guy that I want them to lock up Starlin Castro and to be a cog on this team for a long time. I mean, this is a guy that I think could be the part of the Yankees infield for the next 7 to 8 years. I think he is a guy that can be there. He puts up very good numbers. Whether he stays at second or goes to third, I think there's interchangeable things that you can do there with Torres and Castro and Didi. But no, nobody wants to get rid of these guys. I don't know why this is a thing. Like Castro and Didi should be part of the long-term vision of this team.
The beauty of this infield setup right now is that between Didi and Castro, they're both young. They're both 28 years old. They've got the young kids coming up like Gleyber Torres and also Tyler Wade, who's now in the major leagues. Headley is a non-factor. Headley is on his way out. He's got 1 foot out the door. His contract is up finally after 2018. If next season someone is knocking on the door and you need to ship Headley out and you eat the contract, that's what they're going to do. So there will be an open spot in the infield. Don't worry, everyone. There will be spots in the infield.
And Starlin Castro has played multiple positions in the past. He was a good shortstop coming up with the Cubs. Obviously, he's playing a good second base. I mean, he makes some bonehead errors out there occasionally, but who cares? The guy is a hell of a player. This is definitely the guy that needs to be on this team. But my point is that he could probably slide over to third base. There are many shortstops, including ones in the Bronx, all-star Hall of Fame guys that have made the transition from short to third. It happens all the time. He is a guy that has the power to be a third baseman. He's got the glove. He's got the arm. He can absolutely go over there. Gleyber Torres, they're saying, they're putting him at third base. There's options here. I don't think Didi's moving. I think Didi's the shortstop. He's going to be the shortstop for a long time, but I do think Castro can move either to second, can be at second or at third, and then Torres the same, one or the other. So there's plenty of spots.
You know what I figured out? An easy way to get you fired up is to say that the Yankees should move on from Didi or Castro.
Oh, it pisses me off. It pisses me. I feel like people just take these guys for granted that there's better options. Look around the league. Tell me better options that are accessible, that you don't have to give up guys for. These are great options. Not every single player has to be a stud, even though those two guys are studs.
Yeah, I mean,
not every single player has to be a stud.
Castro made the All-Star team. He's only not going because of an injury. Also, Robbie Cano is replacing him, which is perfect irony. And Didi Gregorius was in the final vote, which is essentially basically an All-Star. And I'm pretty confident that if Didi didn't miss the first 3 weeks of the season, maybe he would have had a better case to win that final vote over Bogarts won it, right? Kansas City.
Yeah, someone from Kansas City won. The other thing is, when you're looking at Castro, the only guy that beat him out to start the All-Star game was Altuve. And
one of the best players in the league.
Yeah, so we're literally talking about a guy, even though he wasn't brought up here. I know people are thinking it, though. I know you're thinking it. Someone out there is thinking Starlin Castro is expendable for some reason or another. But, I mean, this was a guy that would have been voted in a starter for the All-Star game if it wasn't for Jose Altuve, who's a stud.
All right, what's next?
The next one is from Jackie Noriega. An article in Newsday mentioned that Aaron Judge was a regular first baseman in high school. When he went to Fresno State, there was already a first baseman that they refused to move, and they gave Judge the option to either playing outfield or who would be on the bench. What do you think of the Yankees next year or at some time in the future moving Judge to first base? The article also mentioned that Girardi has spoken with Judge about his first base playing days and why they ended up switching when he got to Fresno State. Judge has said he has a lot of fond memories playing first base. Do you think it's too far out of the box for the Yankees to ever move Judge from right field to first base if the whole Greg Bird at first base thing does not work out?
First initial reaction is yes, that sounds too far out of the box for the Yankees.
Oh yeah, okay. I think now, yeah, no doubt now.
This season, it's too far out of the box.
Oh, this season is definitely not happening, 100%.
Right.
When we're looking, I don't know, I read this question also is looking into the future too, if Bird doesn't work out long term. So we'll address both. This year, no, it's not happening. In the future, I don't know, maybe.
I kind of like it too.
There's a lot of right fielders that could play first base. I think a lot of bigger guys, that are bigger in stature also make that transition from the outfield to a position where, there's not as much running around. It could be a good move for his future if, down the road, they see that if there's a void and he can actually play first base. I have no idea what his skills are at first base, but if you look at the player and the tools that he has, I could see him being able to play there.
I also think a lot of people just think you can stick any old schmuck at first base and it's going to be fine. We saw that
right.
with A-Rod, Chris Carter.
A-Rod proved that wrong.
Yeah. A-Rod, we saw it with Chris Carter. We saw it with Jason Giambi. First base is a very important position, especially when you got guys like Chase Headley across the diamond trying to throw darts across the infield, and it's 15 feet in the air sometimes, although Judge might be able to catch those.
Yeah, he would be able to catch those. Yeah, although I am kind of on the side that I don't think it's that difficult of a position, but I think a lot
compared
of
compared to shortstop or center field, no. But it's not just easy.
No, I know, but they're major leaguers. I mean, Judge is a super athletic guy. I bet if he was made do it, if so, they told him today, you're playing first base, I bet he would go out there and do it well. I just think he's that good of an athlete, and I think especially if he has experience playing the position. I mean, look, this is down the road. This is nothing we're talking about anytime in the near future. But, you know, with the amount of outfield prospects that are on there, is it out of the question crazy to think that in 2 years, 3 years, that this could be a move? I don't think so. I mean, you never know. I think Judge would do anything that's good for the team, and if that was the move, then, you know, that's the move.
Long term, I like it for two reasons. First, I think you already said it, but it could save his knees. I know a lot of people are worried about, because of his size, running around in the outfield, he's going to have health problems. There's less running at first base, so that could keep him healthier longer.
Yeah, I agree. I think for a long term, for the longevity of the player and keeping him healthy and keeping him on the field as long as possible, I do think it's a good move because, I mean, the amount of impact that his knees and all his everything is taking, his hips, his ankles when he's running around are just, you know, it's tenfold because of the size of him. And it's as he gets older, it's just going to get worse. So he's going to become less mobile. And yeah, I mean, if he has experience, I think it could be a natural move down the road.
And also, I'd like it because we'd get so many pictures of players standing on first base next to Judge looking tiny.
True. Another solid point.
All right, you got any predictions for the Home Run Derby, which is tonight as people are listening to this?
Yeah, I'm expecting, first of all, I'm really looking forward to this. I think this is probably one of the more anticipated Home Run Derbies for a long time with the guys that are in it. Stanton versus Sanchez in the first round. That would be a nice upset. Although I said, Sanchez, but Sanchez is not swinging the greatest bat right now. So I don't think he's making it out of the first round. I do think Stanton's going to make it out. I think Stanton's going to make it to the finals, and I'm going to go chalk. I think Aaron Judge is just too big and badass to not go out there and mash the ball and use as little energy as anybody out there to hit the ball over the park, over the fence. And I think it's going to be an epic showdown of Stanton versus Judge in the finals. And Judge is going to play the upset and beat Stanton at home and shock the world.
Would people even be upset about that? I feel like at this point, Judge is the most popular player in the league. It's the matchup everyone wants to see and needs to see. We've been waiting for this. We've been saying this all first half. Stanton, Judge needs to happen.
Yeah, it's not like it's going to be a lot of Marlins fans at this game. There's not really usually a big...
There's not going to be a lot of what?
Marlins fans?
What are that? What's that?
Right. Exactly. They're kind of like Rays fans. They're similar. I think actually Logan Morrison played for both teams. But I'll tell you, along the way, I do hope that we get a Judge, Cody Bellinger, because I haven't really seen Cody Bellinger too much, obviously being on the West Coast. You know, this guy's all the hype. I've seen highlights and things like that, but it'd be fun to watch him and Judge go toe-to-toe.
Miguel Sano, I think, is also a sleeper. He can hit the ball a million miles.
Yeah, so in a perfect world, it's Stanton, Sano, then Bellinger, Judge, and then everybody gets what they want with Stanton and Judge.
You think we might get any craziness in the All-Star game since now it doesn't, quote-unquote, count?
I hope so. I hope they all have fun and just play loose, and it's more of what it used to be. It's just an exhibition showdown, and we're seeing like awesome Bo Jackson moments and things like that. Like, yeah, I hope so. I hope it's more fun than it is, you know, they're trying to go out there and win a game. I think it's ludicrous.
One of the ones I remember, it was Larry Walker, right, who put the helmet on the other side and then went to bat right-handed.
I don't remember that.
I think it was against Randy Johnson.
Oh, yeah, it was right afterwards. It was right after Randy Johnson threw behind somebody.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that was, again, when Randy Johnson threw that ball behind, I think it was John Kruk, wasn't it, that he threw behind?
No, he struck out John Kruk on three of the nastiest sliders you've ever seen in your entire life.
Yeah, but didn't he throw the ball behind him first?
He might have.
And then he threw him out?
I don't remember.
Yeah, so it was, there's moments like that. I think the Bo Jackson moments are one of the clearest. But yeah, I hope we have some fun out there. I hope these guys have a good time. It's supposed to be a fun day of celebrating the game of baseball.
Okay, guys, as I said, next episode, we're going to be going back and giving out some midseason awards for the Yankees. But before that, follow us on Twitter @YankeesPodcast, @BronxPinstripes. I'm sure you already follow that. My Twitter handle is @Andrew_Rotondi, and Scott's is @ScottReinen. Also, call the voicemail line 646-480-0342. And that's what you're going to be listening to right now is some voicemails. Scott, any last words?
Yeah, I'm going to give a special shout out to my beautiful wife. It is her birthday today, Monday, and she is uh, she puts up with a lot of podcasting hours while I'm sitting in this room talking to you. So happy birthday, Bevan. If you're in the education field, I'll throw a little shameless plug in there. Go follow her on Twitter at TeachTrainLove if you're in the education field. So yeah, happy birthday, Bevan.
Happy birthday, Bevan, and enjoy these voicemails.
Believe it or not, George isn't at home. Please leave a message at the beep.
I must be out or I pick up the phone.
Where could I be? Believe it or not, I'm not home.
He-Man, He-Man. Guy's been up here not even a week. Has already contributed more than Chris Carter contributed the entire season. Wow, I can't believe it. We actually are getting production out of first base. This guy opens his eyes while he's playing. It's awesome.
Hey, it's Mike in Maryland with a service announcement to all the Yankee fans. Listen, we've got to get Didi to the All-Star game. He has stepped in for Jeter, and let's face it, he has performed well above any reasonable Yankee fans' expectations since he started.
Why the fuck is Tyler Clifford still employed? He should be going away. Far, far away with Chris Carter, somewhere where they can enjoy being horrible.
Hey guys, just sitting down watching the Yankees Brewers game. The Yankees have a 4-2 lead after Judge crushes a dinger to center field. I'm just sitting around waiting for Betances and Chapman to come and shove a thumb up their ass. So have a good weekend.
So I'm sitting here watching the Brewers game on Saturday and trying to show it up. And the ball goes inside, and he tells the umpire that fucking hits him. And the umpire's like, oh, yeah, sure. Go to first base. Didn't even ask for any kind of help. I mean, granted, replay really doesn't show you all that much, but, like, are you kidding? This team has, you know, if they didn't have bad luck, they'd have no luck at all. It's ridiculous. It's anytime something bad happens, they can't recover. And the next guy has a fucking 3-run home run. But come on. Just absolutely fucking awful.
I'm amazed I actually saw Jason Shreve throw a strike. What's wrong with him?
Andrew from Out the Kitchen. Are you fucking kidding me, Pineda? Are you fucking kidding me, Tanaka? Just when we think you're good again, you're not. Two terrible performances when we need them the most. Fuck off.
So glad that this is the All-Star break. Because it seems like the Yankees cannot get right. Clifford on Friday just gives up the grand slam. Saturday, they barely pulled it out of their ass. Shout out to Cliff Racing for home run, walk off, Varsity Stadium. And then Tanaka, he's just serving up meatballs, serving them up. I just don't fucking get it, man. I hope Judge would for home run derby. Only bright spot we have this year is him.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.